Lawmakers desert the state capitol for an energy meeting in D.C.
Is it appropriate on a 9-day session to be sending this many people? I absolutely think it is, and I think the state will benefit.
From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 1st of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans' earning power has improved relative to other states.
2008 was, just generally speaking, a very good year in Alaska's economy in sort of almost every way we can imagine.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization.
More than a third of the state legislature is heading to Washington this week to meet with federal officials and to attend sessions of the Energy Council, a group of states and other countries that get together every year to discuss common energy-related issues. The rest of the legislature is using the long weekend for trips back to their home districts, as committees and floor sessions are limited through Wednesday and are completely canceled on Thursday and Friday. House Resource Co-Chair Craig Johnson recognizes the press of the 90-day session and the amount of work ahead for members before adjournment, but he says energy is the number one topic of this year's session.
All of those are being discussed and will be discussed. And with a new administration and new people, I think it's important that Alaskans be before those members of that administration telling our story. We are a long way from Washington. We are often forgotten. And the more people we can have there, at the end of the day, there will be a lot better understanding of us, of the administration, and of the administration of us.
Johnson says outside the sessions of the council itself, members will meet individually or in small groups with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Others will meet with the Army Corps of Engineers, also with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the Energy Department, the American Gas Association, and the Department of the Interior.
And there are some of the members who are going to meet with the White House and try to meet with the president. I think it's particularly important now that some of our minority members attend, because they have a better end to the administration maybe than we do by the nature of the letter they have at the end of their name. So is it appropriate on a 9-day session to be sending this many people? I absolutely think it is, and I think the state will benefit.
Anchorage Democrat Berta Gardner, who attended the Energy Council meetings last year, is among those going back. She plans to talk to people about the gas line, about offshore development, and about development access to the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. She says that last year, some of her best encounters were with Congress.
We met with the chief of staff for Senator Bingaman, who is the chair of the Energy Committee, and his first question to us is, what the heck are you guys doing? You got two competing gas pipeline programs. What are you thinking? And we were able to explain to him, you know, remember last year we didn't have any. This year we've got two. To us, that's a huge victory. And explain to him, you know, the points of our plan and why we thought it was important.
The Senate has scheduled a regular floor session tomorrow for business. Both the House and Senate will hold abbreviated technical sessions Thursday, during which no state business can be conducted. A bill in the state legislature aims to expedite the construction of an in-state gas pipeline to bring natural gas from the North Slope to South Central Alaska. Its prime sponsor is House Speaker Mike Chenault, a Republican from Nikiski. KDLL's Ben Stanton reports.
The House Resources Committee is currently reviewing House Bill 369. At their committee meeting Friday afternoon, Chenault explained that the bill includes creation of a development team that would focus on a deadline of July 1, 2011 for starting construction of a gas line, with gas flowing by 2015. He says without such a deadline, progress would not be made.
As I found out in my many years down here and years in the construction business, if there's not a deadline, normally, projects take considerably longer and at times will cost you considerably more than if you have that deadline.
According to the bill, the development team also combines efforts of Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority, the In-State Gas Line Coordinator, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and the Alaska Railroad Corporation. Chenault feels economic opportunities and energy needs would be met by a gas line. With that in mind, Chenault says the development team would work out the steps along the way with permit applications and other work to get a project moving.
But we've been working on this project for a number of years, Mr. Chairman, as I said, we haven't turned a shovel full of dirt yet. And I think that it's time that we take and quit studying the project, that we take and get the information that we have together and we put it together in a fashion that maybe we do get to that point to actually build a pipeline.
Chenault's staff member Tom Wright guided the committee through the bill Friday. He reviewed the specifics about the creation of an in-state pipeline project manager. The person would be appointed by the Alaska governor, and the position would last until 1 year after the completion of the pipeline. As the bill is written now, it gives priority to this pipeline project over other projects that might be occurring at the same time. Representative Peggy Wilson from Wrangell expressed concerns that making such a high priority to the pipeline could get in the way of those other projects.
What this sounds like to me is the state is going to stop what's happening and everything else is going to go gung-ho until we get this done, and we can get it done that way because we're going to stop everything that we think isn't important.
Wright responded saying that common sense would be needed. He also called that scenario improbable.
I hate to use the word common sense in state government sometimes, but I think common sense would prevail. And quite frankly, you know, there are ample state employees who are probably going to be working on other things that aren't going to be involved in this project.
State land, right-of-way, and railroad land would be used as much as possible, with the idea that the permitting process would be facilitated. House Bill 369 also creates an in-state gas line steering committee composed of members of city and borough government, state agencies, the private sector, and the presiding officers of the state legislature. In Kenai, I'm Ben Stanton.
Governor Parnell said he'd like the legislature to make up its mind on what the governor should do. He says last year his office was given $7 million for work on the in-state gas line. He says his team is meeting the legislature's own schedule and is within budget under last year's instructions.
If they think they want us to change courses, we can, but it's a little schizophrenic to tell us to do one thing 1 year and try to unravel it the next and do something different. So I'd like to see some consistency there. We're going to continue discussions with them. We'll discuss the bills with them, and I've begun that. Our Representative Chenault and I spoke about his effort yesterday, and I appreciate the fact that he came to talk to me.
Parnell says his team was charged last year with getting cost estimates on all the options possible for an in-state line and to get as many permits as possible for a developer to use. That would speed up construction and lower the cost of a line. He says Chenault's bill would spend hundreds of millions of dollars for a project without the advance work necessary. He says Chenault's project does not consider that there is no gas available at this point. U.S. Senator Mark Begich issued a statement on Friday in response to an attempt in the Senate by one lawmaker to block the extension of unemployment benefits and COBRA benefits for 30 days. Retiring Republican Senator Jim Bunning has refused to allow the Senate to adopt the legislation by unanimous consent. The lack of congressional action means the benefits expired last night.
It's outrageous. I mean, as a new member here, I just think, how he could hold this up is beyond belief, and I'm hopeful we can get back on track here.
Begich says it's irresponsible that a single senator would add to the economic uncertainty of thousands of Alaska families by standing in the way of a bipartisan compromise to extend unemployment benefits and health insurance benefits.
It's just one senator who is objecting and will, you know, create havoc on people who are struggling out there, middle class families that are searching and working to try to get a job. And in the meantime, they need those unemployment benefits so they can continue to feed their family. And what he's done is by this single action of his, he's delayed folks from getting their unemployment benefits.
Begich says when Congress gets back to work tomorrow, the body will attempt again to extend benefits. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, high drama for the winner of the state spelling bee.
I was pretty nervous because they were all whispering around and no, what was going on?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Find qualified Alaskans to fill your company's job vacancies at Alexis, the state of Alaska's virtual career center. Alexis has hundreds of workers for you to browse through, and you can specify details about required levels of experience and other qualifications. Learn more at alexsys.alaska.gov or visit any Alaska job center. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Alaska is ranked 8th in the country in per capita income behind eastern states like Connecticut, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and New York. KDLG's Mike Mason has the details.
The per capita income in 2008 in Alaska was $44,039. To put that in perspective, the 2008 per capita income in Connecticut was over $56,000, while the per capita income in Mississippi was just over $30,000. Alaska's 2008 per capita income was outlined in depth in an article written by state economist Neil Fried that was published in the February edition of Alaska's Economic Trends. He says 2008 was an unusual year for a number of reasons.
I think the biggest single factor when you're looking at this per capita or personal income picture for Alaska that really sort of bumped us up there was this record-sized permanent fund dividend, you know, over $3,000 versus the other ones that are sort of closer to $1,000. But 2008 was also, just generally speaking, a very good year in Alaska's economy in sort of almost every way we can imagine.
The PFD in 2008 was a whopping $3,200, but last year the PFD was $1,300. In 2008, Alaska permanent fund distributions totaled nearly 7% of the total personal income in Alaska. That's the highest percentage in recent memory, with the closest year being the year 2000, when PFD distributions totaled just over 6% of the total personal income. Fried confirmed that the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development does not yet have the per capita income figures for 2009. However, he says the Bureau of Economic Analysis recently released some numbers through the third quarter of last year that shows total personal income falling by 1.4% compared to the $30.2 billion in personal income recorded in 2008. During that same first three quarters of 2009, the total national personal income fell by 1.7%. Fried says the numbers suggest Alaska's economy is still doing a little better than the national economy.
Maybe we will continue to maintain that sort of jump in up in rankings that we experienced in 2008 when we popped up to being in the eighth place for per capita income, whereas before that we were getting pretty close to the national average.
Personal income is the income received by all people from all sources, and per capita income is basically where you take all of the personal income in the state, add that up, and then divide it by all of the people in the state. Fried admits that it can often be a misleading stat in that it's most often used to compare one state with another.
Yeah, I mean, this is not adjusted for the cost of living or anything like that. I mean, but some of these states are also very high cost of living states. You know, Connecticut, New Jersey, Massachusetts, New York are all famous places for, you know, generally speaking, a high cost living. And in some cases, particularly if we're looking at sort of the more urban parts of Alaska and the more urban parts of some of those states, the cost of living is actually higher in some of those states than others. But then when we look more broadly speaking, we look at, for example, rural Alaska versus sort of the rural parts of those states, you know, the opposite is true, because in most parts of the country, the rural parts of the country, cost of living is significantly lower. Whereas in Alaska, it's sort of the opposite story.
The article about Alaska's 2008 per capita income was published in the February edition of Alaska's Economic Trends, which can be found on the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development website at labor.state.ak.us. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
A poor pink salmon projection has prompted one of Petersburg's canneries to stay closed this summer. Ocean Beauty Seafood says they will continue to buy salmon from all the fishermen who usually sell to them, but they only plan to land and process the catch at the company's plant near Juneau. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Ocean Beauty Seafoods told Fishermen the news this month. The Seattle-based processor will only be operating the larger of its two shoreside facilities in Southeast, the Excursion Inlet plant near Juneau. Ocean Beauty will also work with another company, Alaska General Seafoods in Ketchikan, to expand their combined fleet of tenders that will purchase fish on the grounds. Ocean Beauty plans to place its smaller Petersburg cannery on a one-year furlough, with the exception of herring roe on kelp. That's a small niche processing operation just in the spring. Tom Sunderland is Ocean Beauty's director of marketing.
This is based on the fish and game projections for the very, very low pink salmon harvest for Southeast. Based on the fish and game numbers, there just aren't going to be enough fish to profitably operate all the plant capacity. There's going to be way more plant capacity in Southeast this year than that number of fish will justify.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is projecting a catch of 19 million pink salmon this summer in Southeast. That harvest would be roughly half of last year's catch, as well as half the annual average for the past decade. Ocean Beauty's Petersburg operation primarily cans salmon and processes salmon roe caviar. While it will not be buying salmon at that plant this summer, Sunderland says the company has done its best to protect its fleet of fishermen through the arrangement with Alaska General Seafoods.
So we will support all the fishing areas and all the fishing fleet we always have.
Ocean Beauty spent a long time trying to decide what to do this summer, according to Sunderland, who says the company was certain of losing money if it kept both its Southeast facilities open. It was still a difficult choice, according to Sunderland, who says the company was concerned about the impacts the one-year closure would have on Petersburg's economy.
That's the thing that caused us the most heartburn of all, because we're strictly a shoreside processor, and you know, we don't operate any at-sea catcher processor boats or anything. We operate strictly shoreside everywhere we are. And so we always think about these communities.
As one of the town's three major processing plants and one of only two salmon canning operations, Ocean Beauty's one-year hiatus could have a variety of impacts on Petersburg's economy. Less fish landed in town means less raw fish tax income for city coffers. That annual revenue helps pay for the harbor and other local services. One less processing plant will also mean less revenue for the city's water and electric utilities. Ocean Beauty is also a customer at Petersburg's community cold storage. Ocean Beauty has told its fishermen that it will provide some services in town for those who like to base themselves here in the summer. However, local businesses worry there will still be fewer outside boats coming to town. Ocean Beauty employs roughly 150 or more workers during the summer. Most are from outside Alaska. However, they make use of local restaurants, bars, and retail stores. Chamber of Commerce board member Hillary Whitethorne is a co-owner of Javahoo's Coffee Shop and Keto's Cave, a bar and liquor store located right by the Ocean Beauty bunkhouse.
My employees have all heard about it, and it concerns them as well, you know, especially the employees here at Keto's. As far as customer flow and tips and all that kind of thing is all, I think, running across their minds. And the bunkhouse is right next to our business, so we do generate a lot of business from the employees that are employed through Ocean Beauty, so that's unfortunate to have that loss. And I would assume it will affect a lot of businesses in town just as far as groceries go. And, you know, they don't tend to spend a lot of money, but there's just more people in town, and that always generates more money in our economy.
However, as a business person, Whitethorne understands Ocean Beauty's decision. She also adds an optimistic note, suggesting the situation could be a learning experience that helps local businesses improve what they do and ideally attract more of the people who are going to be here spending money. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The Fairbanks area real estate market appears to have survived the recession that devastated housing sales in much of the lower 48. The Greater Fairbanks Area Board of Realtors reports relatively stable conditions. Board president and longtime local real estate agent Eileen Cummings says Fairbanks saw a couple down months in late 2008 and early last year, but housing sales statistics show the market has steadied.
The total of 2009, 881 were sold, and the total of 2008, 877. So 2008 was a pretty darn good year. It turned out to be, started out really bad for a lot of people.
The average home price last year was $216,000, slightly up from 08, but a little below the price peak of 2007. Cummings says Fairbanks is generally about 2 years behind the curve in responding to national trends, but the community has likely avoided a real estate crash like the one Alaska experienced in the 1980s, and that's currently being suffered in many lower 48 cities.
I think if we were going to bottom out like we did in the 80s, we would have done it by now. So I think we're going to be all right.
Cummings says one area of local real estate concern is a rising number of foreclosures. Alaska has seen relatively few foreclosures compared to the rest of the country, but Cummings says the number of homeowners turning properties over to lenders is going up in the Fairbanks area.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
An eighth grader from the Craig Middle School beat out 158 spellers from around Alaska to take top honors at the state spelling bee on Friday. As KRBD's Deanna Garrison reports, Oliver Price will be one of two students representing the state in the Scripps National Spelling Bee in Washington, D.C. this spring.
After six rounds, the spelling bee came down to Price and Juno 7th grader Braden Wrightson. The two competed in six more rounds before Wrightson misspelled abumbrate. Price then went on to cinch his win, correctly spelling meniscus.
M-E-N-I-S-C-U-S.
After spelling the final word, Price says he wasn't immediately sure that he had won.
I was pretty nervous because they were all whispering around and what was going on.
As the winner of the state spelling bee, Price was presented with a trophy, savings bonds, a Webster's dictionary, a subscription to an online encyclopedia, and an online dictionary service. More importantly, he advances to the National Spelling Bee competition. Price has been competing in spelling bee since he was in the fourth grade.
Well, I had done good on the classroom test, kind of. And I was interested in doing some sort of academic competition. There wasn't really anything in fourth grade besides that.
The best Price had done previously is third place in the Washington State Spelling Bee. Nerves can take a toll on the best spellers, especially in the high-stakes world of spelling bees. Price says he worked hard to maintain his cool throughout the competition.
Just don't look at the crowd and nothing, just get up there and spell the words.
Price studied thousands of words in the lead-up to the competition and says he has steadily improved his ability to see word patterns over time. His father, Dan Price, helped him prepare, as did a couple of teachers at the Craig Middle School. Before the Craig Klawock Spelling Bee, Dan Price says his son studied spelling for about an hour a day. He says the study time increased to 3 to 4 hours a day after Oliver advanced to the state competition.
I'm proud of him that he achieved the goal that he's wanted to do for 4 years, and he worked hard to do it. He studied many hours to do it.
Dan Price attended the Spelling Bee competition at the Anchorage Performing Arts Center. He says it wasn't always easy sitting in that audience.
Each time it was his turn, it was nerve-wracking. At the end, when there was two left, the other kid misspelled a word, so Oliver got a championship word, and he misspelled it. So that was a little tense. So that allowed the other kid back in, and they had to go another two rounds before Oliver won.
Dan Price says he intends to accompany Oliver to the National Spelling Bee competition in Washington, D.C. at the end of May. Before then, he says he will continue to work with Oliver as he attempts to memorize the countless words that he could encounter at the national competition.
They published a list of 24,000 words that have been in all of the National Spelling Bee since 1925. So probably we'll start in on that next week.
The National Spelling Bee runs May 29th through June 6th. If Price does well on the initial written competition, he could advance to a nationally televised portion of the Spelling Bee. Price will be one of two Alaskans competing in this year's National Spelling Bee. The winner of the Interior Alaska Spelling Bee this Saturday will also advance to the national competition. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
As far as natural disasters go, the conjunction of a blizzard watch and a tsunami advisory is a rather unique combination, but that's what residents of Kodiak dealt with on Saturday. Though no visible wave from the magnitude 8.8 Chilean earthquake made it ashore in Kodiak, and the blizzard petered out after only a couple inches of snow hit the ground, many people were concerned about the potential of either to cause problems there. While many people gathered at Mill Bay Beach to watch for the tsunami, only a few were on the spit at St. Paul Harbor in downtown. One was 9-year-old Shella Ray Nugent, who was there with her dad.
I heard on the radio that there was an earthquake in Chile, and they said there's going to be a tsunami in Hawaii. And then I saw on my dad's computer tsunami warning, and I clicked on it, and it said that there's going to be something in Alaska. I started freaking out. I was scared. I'm like, it's going to be 200 feet tall.
Kodiak Island Convention and Visitors Bureau Executive Director Janet Buckingham's office is over the water on Pier 1, but she was on the spit in her truck with her husband.
Oh, I wanted to be able to make a quick getaway and stay in the truck. But I've never been in a tsunami advisory before, and so I thought, in case it happened, at least I could see it, you know. I needed to be able to text and Twitter and Facebook that I was out waiting for the tsunami. What do you think of this ice? Blizzard and a tsunami advisory in one day, only in Kodiak.
Though Saturday's conjunction of potential natural disasters fizzled out by early evening, advisories, watches, and warnings for both tsunamis and blizzards should always be taken seriously. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ben Stanton in Kenai, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Mike Mason in Dillingham, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, and Jay Barrett in Kodiak. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by AT&T, your world delivered. Details at www.att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.